You're listening to The Lyric Feature on RTE Lyric FM.
Good evening, hello and welcome to The Lyric Feature. This is our last programme before we take a break for the summer months, and we wanted to take the opportunity to pay tribute to a friend of and regular contributor to our programmes over the years. The poet Gerald Daw, who died last month after a long illness, was Professor of English and Fellow of Trinity College Dublin until his retirement in 2017. He was also the inaugural director of the Oscar Wilde Centre for Irish Writing at Trinity. He studied English at Ulster University before later becoming a lecturer in Galway University, where he published his debut collection, Sheltering Places, in 1978. It was the first of many collections which he would publish in his lifetime with the Gallery Press, whose most recent publication, Another Time, Poems 1978 to 2023, is an extended selection from Daw's collected works. Some of those poems were inspired by Dunleary, where Gerald lived for the last 35 years and where producer Claire Cunningham met him in 2022 to make the programme you are about to hear now. This is From Kingstown to Dunleary.
Gulls have the best of both worlds here. The last remaining trawlers ditch the unsaleable back into the sea, and when they're not out, skips are gone through. Families unsure what to do for the day walk about or stand along the east pier, convinced that all is well, pointing at Hoth to queries about what's over there.
Still quite a lot of fondness for Kingstown among certain communities and clubs that like to hold on to the Kingstown aspect of it.
There was a certain yachting coterie which did not mix with the common folk.
The ferry crosses to the north wall, but is it really moving? We brace ourselves against this gusting wind and hail. The Dart shuttles under bridges like a toy train.
The greenness of the coast and the blueness of the sea, the waves have a brogue as they break.
It says something about the town itself when you have that sign up there and it says, all are welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen of the People's Park, hooded lads beyond in the bus shelter, those well-to-do and those who barely keep their heads above water, do we live our lives in vain?
Dunleary Shopping Centre, the monstrosity of it, in many ways ruined the atmosphere of Dunleary, but it has redeemed itself by the building of the new library.
A dog checks along the cold seafront. Old married couples get on with it. This is a homecoming of sorts. Scuba divers at the 40-foot bob and duck like seals caught in the drifting nets. The coast is clear. Wales and England ride on the tide. The sky is laced with jet trails. By the time we reach the baths, the aquamarine has turned ice blue.
I'm here on the east pier of Dunleary Harbour. Beautiful harbour it is too. My name's Gerald Daw, I'm a poet. And I've been living in Dunleary for the last 30 years. I'm going to be meeting friends and colleagues over the next 40 minutes. And we're going to be talking about Dunleary, its history, its past, its literary and cultural connections. And the first person I'm going to be talking to about all this is the broadcaster, Brendan Balfe.
Brendan, you moved here in the early 70s. What was Dunleary like?
to a young lad as you would have been?
Yeah, well, we moved here when we got married in 1974, but I would have been also around the place before that, even though I lived up in Kilmacud Road, so it was still within the borough, more or less. And it was sort of a place to go to for a cup of coffee or to meet pals or whatever was going around. It was a sort of a social place to go to because there's not a lot up in Kilmacud, I can tell you. So you come down here, pals of mine who lived in Monkstown in that neck of the woods. So that was a place we went to. A favourite place around that time was the Bamboo Cafe, which is down the main street, roughly opposite Walter's Pub, which came later. And the cinema was there, the Adelphi Cinema, we went to see that. Pavilion here was still the old Art Deco thing, not the recent thing. So that was a social place. The Top Hat, the ballroom down at the entrance to the town, had been there since the mid-1953, I think it was the year it opened, and had gone from sit-down ballroom orchestras to show bands to punk and Clashes and Vipers, and Nirvana played there, and people of that nature. And eventually became, in its latter days, a skateboard emporium, a skating rink.
Yeah.
So I think I was only in it once or twice. It did a couple of TV shows from the Top Hat as well, Light Now. I think Jerry Ryan did a pop show from there. So that was the main place, though, I love best in the area for entertainment purposes was the Longford Tennis Club, which would be roughly where the Sea Point Dart Station is now, wow, down that end. It was just a tennis club, but they had a dance there of a Sunday, and the big band were the Green Beats, John Keogh and the Green Beats, who were our Beatles. And we're talking now about, late 60s, early 70s, that sort of time. And they were huge. They were the best possible beat group.
I've been looking out, baby.
So there was a lot going on,
there was
really
a lot going on.
I mean, for some reason, I have a sense of a rainy, grey 60s Dunleary. It must be, I'm clearly wrong.
No, it wasn't that.
So when you married, then you moved into...
Yes, from Kilmacud Road.
Yeah.
And, Eileen, my wife, she was a Dunleary native. I was a Kilmacud native. And we married in 74. We saw the house on a Sunday driving around for auction. Apparently there had been a death. The owner was moving to a nursing home, apparently, an elderly person. Sort of villa-type houses, they were called at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was, some of the front rooms are perfect cubes, a 13 by 13 by 13, believe it or not. And we came in, and I remember our memories. We said to the auctioneer, by the way, there's brown furniture, there's a cupboard and a wardrobe and yokes. Can we have those? And we added an extra every 100 quid and paid for them. I bought them. But in between getting the key and buying them, their family, I won't name the names, came up from the country, got a key to the house from a neighbour and ransacked it and took everything out.
Oh, dear.
And we were known immediately as the young couple, and indeed still are. But we were the first move-ins, if you like, in living memory, because it had all been there since God knows when, since God was a boy.
And when did you discover the kind of resonances that were literally up the street from you and down the street? I mean, Eileen O'Casey was there?
Eileen O'Casey lived up the road, the widow of Sean O'Casey. Wilfred Bramble, as you probably know, lived literally across the road at number one. And he was a graduate of the Gates Theatre, and he went to London and he got Steptoe. And I think he played no other part. I think he played a couple of plays, but didn't do much other than Steptoe, essentially, because it's such a recognisable character and a recognisable part.
And Cusack was there.
Cusack came in when Ira Casey died. Sir, he took on the house, because of its literary reputation, if you like.
I mean, it's an interesting kind of phenomenon, the extent to which that small little area seemed to attract into it actors, writers.
It's very
and so
odd.
On.
Yeah, it's very odd.
But you also have identified other figures who are possibly lesser known today. Like a singer and...
Famous singer, Frankie Blowers, Ireland's Bing Crosby, he was known. He sounded exactly like Bing Crosby.
And when we talk about from the 30s to 40s?
He would have been big in the 40s and 50s. In the theater. He was sort of resident of the Theatre Royal in Hawkins Street, and that closed in 62. He was a band singer, but he became a solo singer. But he was just the living spit of Bing Crosby's voice, extraordinary. And Noel Ginnity, who's my great pal, lives down the road from us, and Maria McDermott Rowe, the actress, is there.
There was a dynamic cultural life back then.
Very much so, indeed. Yeah.
And tell me, when people asked you, where are you from or where are you living, you said Dunleary, you would say Dunleary. I mean, was there a sense that Dunleary wasn't Dublin, that there was an identity to this place, not Dublin? But yes, it was Dublin.
To an extent. Well, a lot of it driven by the yacht clubs. And I've always said that...
How connected were they to your world?
Not remotely. Not in the slightest.
The yacht clubs.
The yacht club. Three of them along the front, as you well know. Yeah. The National, the Royal, and the other one. I can't remember. And they were very, if you like, esoteric in the sense that there was a certain yachting coterie which did not mix with the common folk. But I remember you'd always see... On the Sunday Independent, always on the front page would be whoever, Gareth Fitzgerald or Jack Lynch or somebody, having strawberries with the members of the yacht club at the close of the Dunleary Festival. I said, "What Dunleary Festival?" I mean, you knew nothing about it until it was over. I said, "Where did that happen from?" And it was the three yacht clubs' parties there, occasional a garden party up in the Royal Marine Gardens, and that's where they had the ending. So there was this little thing of yachting coterie, which did not mix very much with the proletariat.
Yeah. I mean, but that's all gone now.
Very much so.
So, I mean, was there the consciousness when you settled and, you know, put your roots down here, that you were sort of seeing an older Dunleary /Kingston
yes.
in the rear mirror?
Yes.
And a new Dunleary emerging?
Yes. Yeah, I love the Victorian town, and I think that it is a Victorian town. I think the council should admire it and prolong it and look after it. You know, it's getting a bit ragged.
East Pier. Not a bad day today, by all accounts. Little bits of mist hang above our encampments. Villas wedged into cliff face. The grand terraces overlooking the bay. An older order of things. Along with the sprightly, there's one or two giving out on the latest iPhones unassuageable complaint. I keep to the east pier under this cold blanket of sky. Patches of mist, like smoke from a fire.
One of the bounties of Dunleary is when you stand with your back to the Royal Marine Hotel here and looking straight down towards Dublin Bay. There is a sense that the Pacific landscape around here is touched by literary and cultural reference. Just where we're standing in the green in front of the Royal Marine across the way is one of the sites of Aidan Higgins's wonderful novel, Balcony of Europe. There's a wonderful image where the father figure in the novel is looking out and seeing the folks heading off for emigration, literally in front of us down towards Carlisle Pier. I'm with Jonathan Williams, the literary agent, and we're before the Royal Marine Hotel, standing on the green in front of it. It has significances that you know well.
The significance is that Henry James stayed here for about 6 or 7 weeks between the end of June 1891 and towards the middle of August. And while he was here, he wrote two short stories. He also had correspondence with his great friend James Russell Lowell and talked about the greenness of the coast and the blueness of the sea and said, the waves have a brogue as they break. And he obviously was very at ease here. He said he came for peace, for obscurity, which is interesting, and for leisure. And the stories he wrote one was called The Chaperone. And by an artful twist, the chaperone is a daughter who's chaperoning her mother in Italy. And he gives the family name as Tramore, which is I think, not insignificant, you know, the town in County Waterford. And the other story is called A Private Life. These two were published then initially in magazines and, you know, subsequently as part of his short story collection. I can't think of any work of James that has an Irish setting, but at least these two stories were composed in that wedding cake of a hotel over there.
That's a wonderful piece of history. I mean, you have your own connection with this town, this neighbourhood, because you moved here, didn't you, from Wales and from Canada, rather.
From Canada. Yes, I'd worked as a writer's agent in Canada, and I had been in Ireland earlier as doing postgraduate work and also in publishing a little, and it was just somehow lodged in my bones. So I emigrated to Ireland from Canada. And I'm rather like a native weed now.
What year was that? How long have you here?
1986.
Ha. So, I mean, you're a native born, more or less, with that length of time. I mean, and also the fact that you've so many writers associated with this region. I mean, you knew them personally or you've represented them as a literary agent.
Yes, one of the estates that my agency handles is that of Mervyn Wall, who lived very close to where we are now and wrote The Unfortunate Fursey and lots of other books. I've been fortunate to get some of his books back into print, both here and in North America.
I mean, one of the things that's always struck me as I walk around here is the connectedness of writers, you know, Beckett and the Harbour, people like Monk Gibbon, Porrick Cullum, indeed Casement.
J.M. Singh.
Singh, of course, yes up in Glenageary. I mean, were you conscious of that when you moved here, that it did have that literary history in the streets?
I think more I was conscious of Dublin having a literary history, and this is part of the conurbation, you know, and it was a place that I thought was a very attractive place to live in. And then the first place I lived here, was very adjacent to the Joyce Tower.
One of the great poems, Thomas Kinsella's Nightwalker, takes place with that in its backdrop and the bay in front of us. And needless to say, a younger generation of writers have emerged, people like Hugo Hamilton, Joseph O'Connor, and others. So, I mean, Henry James has given a kind of invisible grandeur to this wonderful old hotel. It is extraordinary to think that, you know, 100 years, 150 years, or 120 years on, we've got these young poets and writers and novelists walking around and producing work of such quality.
Yeah, it's very heartening.
House of Fiction. A long hay terrace, a drizzle of wind and rain rattles the loose windows upstairs. Is that himself I see, squinting behind the scrim curtains? This is surely where he had spotted the people heading to Carlisle Pier. The belted suitcase, the blue serge suit, the V-neck Gansey, all in readiness for Princess Maud's heave through the Irish Sea. Nothing spectacular but that last sight of Scotsman's Bay as she works herself free.
For 30-odd years, I took the Dart from Dunleary into Trinity College, where part of my teaching job involved working with writers of the future in the Trinity Oscar Wilde Centre. Students at the centre came from many countries all over the world. But the journey often got me thinking about all the people who left this country from Dunleary over decades, but also about the new people arriving, like Mulatto Okori. A student then, I first met her, and now a well-established and published writer. I wondered what impression she had of Dunleary.
Did you have any sense of Dunleary? Did you have any sense of South Dublin, North Dublin? Did you have any sense of landscape?
At the time when I was in Trinity, not necessarily, but I think a few years afterwards, I did do some work in Dunleary. And it was, you know, there's a difference now because now I go there a bit often because I have a daughter who schools there. But at the time when I was coming in to work there, because I was coming to care for an older woman, it was a quiet, and, you know, people just kind of made way on the street, you know, things like that. There was just kind of people looking after one another. It has always been a very lovely place.
Yeah, it's interesting that you should say that, because when I arrived there in the late 80s, early 90s, it did have this feeling of being a cosmopolitan town. And of course, that goes, I suppose, back through generations, back to the 1920s and 30s, because in the old days, it was always perceived to be, as Kingstown, Anglo-Irish, upper-middle-class, conservative. Whereas now you get the feeling that it actually has opened up and there is that sense of being a kind of cosmopolitan. There's that sense of a mix going on, which is fantastic and creative.
Yes,
and absolutely. Productive.
Yes.
The thing that has struck me, you know, about your own writing since the days in the Wild Centre, that you have gone on now to actually become quite a significant and important figure in your own right as a writer and as a cultural leader. I mean, had you any anticipation that this is where you would locate yourself finally here in Ireland?
Honestly, if I had actually envisioned the you know what's going on in my life now, I would have run a mile. You know, it would be the other direction. You know, not at all, Jerry. I think that, you know, sometimes things just happen. I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, that things happen. But, you know, I'm here and I'm trying to figure it out. I never thought that would be the case. Creative writing was just something I was interested in, and I wanted to learn so much about it. And, you know, being in Trinity at the time, at the Oscar Wilde Centre, was such a wonderful space to learn. I was like a sponge. I was picking up from everyone around me, you know. But I didn't think beyond that. There were a few people that were in direct provision that went on to do study, you know, in a third level institution. And most of them were studying things that made sense to me at the time. You know, they were going in for business. I just wanted to do creative. I just wanted to do something with literature. So for me, that was like, what are you doing? You know, you should be doing something practical. But my heart wasn't in any of those things. I went in for where my heart was. So it was wonderful to have you, to have people like Jonathan Williams that I met at the time. But I didn't see anything beyond. And as soon as I finished and I had my opportunity, I got my residency, I went into something else entirely. I became a carer. So it wasn't even something that I thought that I could progress with. But, you know, I think the stories, or my stories, pushed where I wasn't willing to go.
Well, you have a piece you're going to read to us, haven't
you? Yes.
Which is so appropriate, given the kind of the notion of migration and mobility that, in my sense, Dunleary embodies.
Can I tell you something about Dunleary?
Yes.
Every time I'm driving in and I'm driving down towards the town centre, there's a church that I always pass that always interests me. And I smile when I pass. And it says St. Matthias. And it says, all are welcome. You know, I'm sure you live there. You probably don't notice it. But every time I see that church, it makes me, it kind of gives me a warm feeling. I'm like, okay, all are welcome. I'm going to stop by one day and actually just go in.
Go in.
It's just such a beautiful, it says something about the town itself. Mm. When you have that sign up there and it says, all are welcome. The story I'm going to read from today is called Arrival, and it's about a young woman arriving into Ireland for the very first time. She emerged from the baggage collection area in the arrivals and sat on her suitcase. Rustling through her handbag and unable to locate her hairbrush, she stood up and finger-brushed her weave, after which she straightened her tight-fitting denim. Remembering, she had to keep an eye out for the person who is to collect her. She looked up and encountered a man's stare, as if he had been waiting for her to look up for a long time. He was standing a few feet away at the waiting area. He smiled, and when she returned his smile, he walked confidently towards her. She watched him strolling over, deciding he must be the one asked to pick her up. She ran her eyes over him, assessing. He did not fit the image of a taxi driver. He was nicely dressed. The only thing Udeme had given her as a description for the person was that he was tall. He hugged her. When he reached her, it was quick and unexpected. She smiled courteously. He took hold of her suitcase as if she was an old friend, and she removed her hand from the handle. Before she could ask if he was the one sent, he turned and headed for the sliding doors. wheeling her suitcase beside him, hanging her handbag over her shoulder, she hurried after him.
I've seen many changes, many, many changes in Dunleary in my time here. Well, perhaps one of the most dramatic has been the ending of the ferry services, which connected Dunleary, Dublin, Ireland with Britain and the rest of Europe. It's a very dramatic change for the lifestyles of all those people that worked the service and were resided here. But there's also the loss of the soundscape that attached itself to the ferry service, the sound of foghorns. I remember lying in bed mornings and evenings, you could hear the foghorns through the mist, through the fog. And that is now completely gone. One of these strange alterations to our lives here.
Suddenly, fog everywhere. Fog in the trees, in the chimney pots, in the hedges, at the street corner, in the railings. Fog on the roofs of the offices and fog in the garden. Foghorns sounding on the bay that is invisible. Foghorns in the house like a groundswell, the sound of childhood in the dark of early morning. Fog in your eyes, in your hair. Foghorns that come from somewhere deep down, the unnerving fog, the blood pulse.
Some of the other things that have been lost include buildings, streetscapes. The art historian Emer O'Connor recalls her Dunleary childhood and how things started to change even then.
I remember the houses being knocked down to build Dunleary Shopping Centre. The 7 bus stop was there. And I remember being horrified watching. I always loved old houses, and they knocked down this lovely...
The terrace.
They knocked down a beautiful terrace. And I was very young, but I remember thinking how horrible that was. But I later went on to run a gallery in Dunleary Shopping Centre. I was many years in Dunleary Shopping Centre, where I ran a gallery and a kind of workshop place for children.
Oh, very good.
So mums and dads would drop in their children and I'd do all these mad workshops with them, making Christmas decorations and things. It was great. And I sold paintings in that gallery for many, many years up on the third
floor.
Your
own paintings?
My own paintings, yeah. When I thought I could paint, Jerry.
Oh, not at all. We have one of them.
Sorry. I stopped, you know. I got to a stage in my career where it was either go to art college. By this stage, I was in my early 30s, go to art college or go to college. And I went to college then, and the rest is history, really. I haven't really painted much since.
As you walk around the streets of Dunleary, you will see plaques to this writer or that writer. Yeah. Well, what about the artists, the visual artists?
Well, the visual artist, there's a writer I do want to talk about because he was very connected with the visual arts as it happens, and that's John Millington Synge. The visual artist that really got me in Dunleary was Imogen Stewart, of course, because she does the Stations of the Cross, and they're her Stations of the Cross in Dunleary Church. And I remember going into that church as a very young child. You know, it had just been rebuilt after the fire and there was always a smell of rubber in it. Do you remember that smell? Really? And I remember the floor. I'd be a very visual person. It had this kind of black ridged floor, very modern inside. And these extraordinary pieces of work on the wall. And I didn't know what I was looking at, but I know I loved them. So I've sort of followed her career very much since. So there are a number of very fantastic artists in Dunleary, but this is the person that really stands out for me.
I mean, her fingerprints are literally all over that building with the lovely door frames
absolutely,
and so on.
Yeah.
And what's the connection in your mind with Synge then?
I got very interested in John Millington Synge because he lived in Crossways Park and his mother lived up on the Glenageary Road. But John Millington Synge was a brilliant photographer. So he was actually a visual artist in his own way, and I got very interested in his photographs when I was doing my research. And in 1904, he travelled the west of Ireland with Jack B. Yeats. He wrote a series of articles for the Manchester Guardian about, you know, the corporisation and the conditions, and he was really very critical. And Jack B. Yeats illustrated those articles. And later on, of course, his book comes out. So that whole connection really interests me, yeah.
But just step back a minute from that. So, I mean, we have noticed the footprint of the writers that have associated themselves, lived there from the area and so on. Would it be fair to say that the artists, Imogen Stewart being one, are not so well known and their associations with the town?
I think the later artists are better known. I see, I grew up around artists. I met Tom Ryan when I was very young. I was in Harry Kernoff's studio after he died. I remember meeting his sister, Lena. I was very young. I think that was 1972. I remember the smell of that room. But they had certain ways of working, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So to meet work like Imogen Stewart's at such a young age was like a creative explosion. I didn't realise that then, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You don't realise what's happening as you're growing up.
Yeah.
You don't really realise what's
influencing
you.
And this was in Dunleary where you met her.
This was in Dunleary seeing her work in St. Michael's Church.
Yeah. That access, that intimacy, the presence of art like that in a church or nearby local, I mean, it really is a kind of defining element in a writer's and a critic's life.
It's so important. Mm. And what I want to say to you, I mean, to be honest with you, I felt Dunleary Shopping Centre, the monstrosity of it, in many ways ruined the atmosphere of Dunleary. But it has redeemed itself by the building of the new library. And I'm bringing this up because it is a stunning building, but the exhibitions that are put on in there, the visual art exhibitions that go on in there, are absolutely extraordinary and open to everybody.
The journals. Crook-locked cars are parked correctly. Only the Range Rover's slightly askew. Numbered rubbish bins and black bags from the apartments. Left out in place since last night, or was it early this morning? Halfway down the road, a woman backs into full view, admiring herself or just straightening the straps of her slip. And next door, a family on the porch steadies itself. "Don't forget," she says. Who will ever remember that this was so? I can hardly even hear my own footsteps.
I think one of the intriguing things about Dunleary is its actual name. In 1821, the name Dunleary was changed to Kingstown in honour of George IV's visit to the city of the town. And then in 1920, it was officially changed back or given the name of Dunleary. So, I mean, there's always this movement between the past and the changes that happen. One of the really positive changes that have taken place in Dunleary in recent years has been the construction of the magnificent Lexicon Library and Cultural Centre. It's like a great ship looking out over the bay. I'm here in the Lexicon. I'm here to meet Marion Keyes, the librarian and historian, to talk about this library, but also about her understanding of what it's like to come from this town.
You're from Dunleary, or you've got connections here yourself personally.
I am from Dunleary in that I moved here at the tender age of one. I came from the north side and my dad got a job as a postman in County Hall, where the post office was at the time. So I grew up in Dunleary. I had a lovely life here by the sea. We went to the baths, the People's Park, ballet classes in Clorinda Park, and of course the local library up the road on Library Road, suitably named. And that was built in 1912, but it was a small and lovely Carnegie library. and regularly went to, on visits there. So it was a great place to grow up.
I mean, I'm sort of intrigued when we talk about Dunleary and in the background of that, in brackets, Kingstown. I mean, is it actually distinct or distinctive from Dublin? I remember one occasion when I moved here first in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. And I was in the Dart station and I said to the chap, I could have a ticket. He said, where are you going? Ticket for Dublin, is it? And it sort of put me back a bit. I was thinking, well, this is Dublin, is it not? Well, is it? Is Dunleary Dublin or is it a distinctive kind of environment?
I don't think we see ourselves in any way as separate or in competition with Dublin. But, for example, say with our Mountains to Sea deal or our book festival or the Library Voices, authors, they love to come to Dunleary. It's near to the airport, it's near to the Dart station. Many of them stay in the Royal Marine Hotel or the Haddington Hotel. And there's just a lovely ambience here. They can walk the pier, they can walk the parks, and it's a beautiful environment.
In many ways, what we're talking about is the unearthing of the past. Mm. I mean, looking back it is often a way of looking forward too. Do you think that in some way Dunleary had a bad reputation at some stage? You know, this was an Anglo-Irish fortress. The people that lived there had, in a way, shunned the new emerging free state and republic and so on. Or is that just a tired old stereotype?
We had a lot of discussion about that because as part of the decade of centenaries, we were celebrating the name change in 1920 back from Kingstown to Dunleary. So there's still quite a lot of fondness for Kingstown among certain communities and clubs that like to hold on to the Kingstown aspect of it. And in fact, if you look at many of the town names, it's still Georgia Street, upper and lower. There's Clarendon, Northumberland. Many of the English names are still in use widely. But and growing up, it was definitely somewhere that was seen as almost like a spa or a place where people would retire, especially a lot of people from England. So I certainly get what you're saying like that.
So, I mean, there is a kind of an interesting, curious mini history of the town as well, in that its connection, its bridge into Britain, into Wales and into England, that you do see that kind of exchange going on. Maybe not so much now, but certainly in the past. What do you think about that?
Well, I definitely think so, because I lived in London for 8 years and I spent many, many times going backwards and forth on that boat, which sadly finished up in 2014. All the ferries now go through Dublin. Yes, it's the emigration story, but the tourism, it was known as the Gate of Ireland or the Gateway of Ireland. There were dozens of hotels in Dunleary, exactly that kind of what you're talking about, people coming here for a break and to take the air. I suppose in more recent years, it's become very much a centre for youth as well. I think there's a real vibrant population.
And a multicultural kind of sense.
You can see how the town has been changing in that sort of way as well.
And can I ask, in that sense of it changing over the decades, is there a sense in which there is now a reformulated identity for Dunleary? Is there something cohering now, becoming more coherent, of a new 21st century Dunleary, or am I just imagining it?
I think this building itself speaks to that, and I think we know the audiences that come in here, and during normal times we would have, the place would be full with students. Back in 2019, we had 540,000 people came into the library that year, and we're the fifth most popular free visitor attraction in the country. So these are huge volumes, and they're not all one demographic. You've got various older people and adults coming to events and just coming into, whether it's to read the newspapers or to catch the latest exhibition. But then you get a huge family audience, and I can see over the years how that has evolved. Very many Asian, Chinese, Indian families using the facilities here and really enjoying them. But I love when people come over on that boat from Howth to Dunleary for a day trip. They want to come over here, see the library, have some lunch, get a Teddy's ice cream and maybe pop down to the 40-foot, you know, so they make a day of it.
Well, it's getting choppy now and the wind is coming up. It's still, the sun's still breaking through, which is lovely to see.
I'm thinking about the 30 years I've been living in one place and wondering, does it qualify you to be known as a citizen, a native, a local? I think the answer is yes. The Dunleary I resided in the 1980s and the Dunleary my family and I have lived in since is indeed a different space. Even though the physical place hasn't changed that much, not really. As with other cities and towns and villages, the experiences of the past become part of the very fabric of what we know as home, family and friends, as much as hopes and aspirations. I think that living in the town of Dunleary has taught me at least that much. While the past is never over and done with, it's the present we need to look after and cherish and plan to make it better for us all.
Another country. Seaweed, like arms outstretched in the still high tide, floats inland as cars zip by the shrouded pier, the grey-blue sky stacked behind. An old boy pauses on the stairs to see what I see. The lighthouse keeper's house, the great granite rocks, before he returns to his guests, who are all shadows of themselves. Like you at the water's edge, like the heron that's about to strike. Daylight intensifies on your dressing table, rooftop, gable wall, the lonely trees, curtains drawn on leafy gardens. Soon the young will be out jogging. On a ledge of rock, a cormorant airs its wings, gulls tack to the wind, and from the misty harbour, a ferry blasts its slow departure as the few brave souls on their morning stroll wave to no one in particular.
From Kingstown to Dunleary was presented by Gerald Daw and produced by Claire Cunningham. Sound supervision was by Tin Pot Productions and the programme was a Rockfinch production for RTE Lyric FM. Gerald Daw's poetry is published by the Gallery Press. Malatu Uche Okori's short story collection, This Hostile Life, is published by Skeen Press. The programme is available to podcast on the usual podcast platforms and on the RTE radio player.
This week's Lyric feature was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland from the television licence fee. The producer for Lyric FM was Owen O'Kelly.
That was a repeat broadcast of that programme from 2022 as a tribute to Gerald Daw, who died last month. And that's not all from the Lyric feature this evening, and it's not all from Gerald Daw either, for Gerald was a contributor to many programmes here on Lyric, and he also contributed more than once to Poetry File on Evelyn Grant's Weekend Drive. We have two selections that we'll play this evening. The first is one in which the poet remembers a quiet domestic moment at home with his mother. It's called The Wound. And the second is one where the poet remembers a friend and fellow poet who succumbed to illness. We'll hear them back to back here. That's Gerald Daw, The Wound and The Visit from Poetry File in 2018.
Hello, my name is Gerald Daw, and in a minute or two, I'm going to read you the poem, The Wound. There's something very special about those moments when a young boy shares with his mother a private time. No one else is around. It's just the two of them in a kind of unself-conscious, intent, yet fleeting togetherness. One of those moments is at the source of the poem I'll read. It's a recollection of many years ago,
I must have been 6 or 7. The setting, the back pantry of the house I was living in North Belfast. It would have been sometime in the mid-1950s. Summer, for sure, because my mother was preparing a salad. Salad equals summer. The pantry, a longish, dim, working space, with its formidable Belfast sink, gas stove, presses and tables, had a somewhat business-like air to it. In my mind's eye, the windows look out to a backyard which featured a mangle and larder, coal sheds, and the high red brick wall of our neighbours. A back door led to the alleyway or entry, as we knew it by. Almost 60 years ago, the light and stillness comes back easily to me now. Even the hint of a radio playing and the cries of children scattering down the back lane. But that might well be imagined. What I do recall was the very moment the poem tries to render, when, concentrating upon opening a tin of sardines with the strange little silver device at the side of the tin, the unfolding lid suddenly recoiled and caught my mother's hand. In what seemed like slow motion, the young boy I then was stared at the blood and for the first time came close to a shock of encountering the unpredictable. Unperturbed, my mother quickly moved to the big enamel sink and washed her hand clear before applying some pressure to the cut and sealing it with a white cloth. As the poem says, it was all over in an instant. But it wasn't. From such random moments, we learn stuff about life that no amount of teaching or telling will ever do or prepare one for. Poetry does that. The wound. In the long, cool pantry at the back of our house, my mother prepares salad. Lettuce floats like sea creatures in the ice-cold water, gushing from a tap. The brown bowl she tamps leaves into is here forever. Flour sifting, washing out fruit. But in an unexpected moment, she jags the soft flesh between thumb and forefinger, opening a tin of sardines. And slowly we stare at the widening gash as blood starts to flow. Before, under the tap's waterfall, she staunches it with a drying cloth and binds the wound, as I, at 6 or 7, watch it all being over and done with in the blink of an eye. Hello, my name is Gerald Daw, and in a minute I'm going to read you a poem called A Visit. It's about my friend who had managed his illness from his early 20s. Back then, in the 1970s, we would telephone to see how things went, and when he got the all clear, I would travel to see him, and we'd hit out to the pubs of Dublin and share the music we loved. He, with a much greater knowledge than me. Like his understanding of cinema, by comparison, I was a dilettante. If sport connected us, the foundation of our friendship was poetry. His exacting standards never wavered, while mine could sway from time to time under temporary enthusiasms that usually succumbed to his wiser, longer-term view. His own poems are richly lived and imagined. They have the kind of emotional heft which is never ever playing to the gallery. Instead, they ask us to stop and listen and think. His poems see things differently. There might be a simple reason for this. Though born and bred in the wide ascending avenues of South County Dublin, his roots were in part in the coastal villages of County Meath, such as Laytown and Bettystown. He had indeed a touch of the countryman in his walk, and the deliberation and calmness in the way of speaking his mind. When the health problems recurred, he was his stoical self. I called by and we chatted one afternoon in the late summer, as if it was the 1970s all over again. Time passed and lines started to surface out of that conversation. A few months later,
unable to withstand the illness this final time, he left us. I wrote a visit in honour of my friend, Gerard Fanning. Bees at the lavender beds hop and skip and settle momentarily. So many of them are there, once you really start looking. And then at dusk, they make their way off. Is it westwards? As we yarn, a couple of gardens away, the innocent child swings and sings to himself in the sunlight of high-up marshalling rooks, the odd passing shadow of a cloud. And now this, the hesitant breath. Are you the same boy smashing through the salty waves or strolling at a countryman's pace by once-known family fields, a little out of sorts? You know yourself. The night's drawing in along the vivid coast, rather than here or hereabouts. The noisy trees settle down to your kind of silence, the watchful, imminent dawn.
The late Gerald Daw there, reading and introducing his poems, The Visit and the Wound, from our series Poetry File, which aired on RTÉ Lyric FM in 2018. That series was produced by Etna Hand, and Gerald Daw's poetry is available from the Gallery Press. May he rest in peace.
You're listening to The Lyric Feature on RTÉ Lyric FM.
And that's all from The Lyric Feature as we take a summer break before we return this October, when we have so much to look forward to in the new season, including a celebration of the American-Irish composer Jane O'Leary, the story of Ireland's foremost chamber music group, the Contempo Quartet, and their Romanian roots. We'll have three more episodes of Feather and Flock, our series on native Irish birds, and Irene Buckley's new setting of The Lament for Art O'Leary, and much, much more, and we'll tell you all about it throughout the summer. But between now and then, if you have the urge to listen to any of our feature programmes on Lyric, there are over 100 available online. You can stream them via the Lyric feature page of the RTÉ website. You can podcast them from there too, or from the RTÉ radio app, as well as via Spotify or Apple Podcasts and other platforms. So from me, producer Eoin O'Kelly, and production coordinator Michael O'Kane, we wish you a pleasant summer, and we'll be back in October with plenty more. John Kelly is next, coming up at 7 p.m. But to take us up to that, this is Lancome with Newcastle.